FM WBAI New York. It's 7 p.m. Time for Off the Hook.
The telephone is ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. We couldn't get much worse.
And good evening. The program is Off the Hook.
Yes, hi.
Sorry, I'm having, there's problems with this, the board tonight. Anyway, good evening. The program is Off the Hook. This is Red Hack in the studio. I'm joined here by Jim.
Hello.
Mike.
Hi.
Redbird.
Good evening.
Arseny.
Hi.
Walter.
Hello.
And we have Emmanuel and Bernie on the phone. Hello. Oh, hello. Hello?
Yeah, can you hear us?
Yes.
Okay, sounds like you're having some trouble over there. You need assistance?
Yeah, I hit, I've been told to hit the dump button, which apparently was, or not the dump button, but the delayed something button here, and they said 2 weeks ago that it works, and I hit it today, and all I could hear was myself on loop over and over again saying hello, 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 so I didn't know what was going on.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, now you know what the rest of us go through. This is Emmanuel. I'm out here on a freighter, still the same freighter I was on last week at this time, except now it's not this time anymore. It's 2 o'clock in the afternoon for me because we've been making steady eastward progress, and we're about 1,000 miles off the coast of California right now. We're expected to arrive sometime on Friday, and it's been an amazing experience being on this thing for the past 7 days with another couple to go. You just become part of this little community that's in the middle of the ocean. It's like a little mini apartment building that you kind of go upstairs and downstairs and see various familiar faces and kind of forget about the fact that you've got 350 18-wheel-size pieces of cargo with you. I don't know what's in these things. But we've all seen them. They go on the back of 18-wheel trucks or they get stacked up by the shoreline. And these cargo ships are everywhere. And I just happened to find one of them that will give me a ride from California. It's one of the cargo ships.
Sounds fascinating. Yeah, or doesn't sound like much at all, depending.
I'm sorry, you sounded like a robot there. Did you say that again?
We're just describing the difficulties hearing you, and it seems like the difficulties have reached their inevitable conclusion of disconnection. But we still have Bernie S. with us, yes?
Yes, on a somewhat more reliable, but not much more reliable, Sprint PCS connection in Philadelphia.
Wow. So how are things in Philadelphia?
Things are pretty good, and there's a gathering of 2,600 people here this coming weekend. We're going to check out the National Weather Service's NOAA, NOAA office here in Cherry Hill, New Jersey, which is right across the river. They have an open house on Saturday from noon to 4, and then on Sunday we're going to explore a ham fest in Wrightstown, Pennsylvania, and see what wonderful ham radio gear we can find.
I'm sure you'll find plenty of wonderful ham radio gear, there being no other kind, of course. What are some of the things you expect to see at the NOAA facility?
Well, seeing as NOAA is in the news with all the hurricanes. This is one of the many offices that are around the country, courtesy of your taxpayer dollars, that continuously broadcasts weather information. Oh, it sounds like we have Emmanuel back.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that. I have my antenna extended away. Did any of what I said come through?
Yes, much of it, and we were just talking about the weather, so now we have the wind sound effect, so it's really, really quite good.
Uh-huh.
But
the weather.
Bernie's going to see a NOAA open house in Cherry Hill, New Jersey, so we were talking about NOAA and hurricanes.
Yeah.
Well, if anyone is interested in the if anyone's interested in the National Weather Service open house in Cherry Hill, they can email off the hook at oth@2600.com, and we'll send them more information.
Is this near the Bell Labs, the former Bell Labs, or facility there in Cherry Hill?
Okay.
No. Well, it's not. It's not part of that same facility, but it's the same town.
Mm-hmm.
So all kinds of research is done in Cherry Hill, sounds like.
Well, they have links to supercomputers and radio transmitters and other things of interest to folks like us. So it should be interesting. And also, they'll be covering how the same system works, which is a system that transmits packet radio data to specially equipped receivers that you can buy even at Radio Shack that will decode this data and just alert you to hazardous weather situations or other emergencies that are specific to your area.
Okay. I'm sorry. I have to apologize. I was called away for a moment because someone saw me on my satellite, and they were very curious about what I was doing. Curious in a good way, because they've never seen anybody talking on a satellite before. I'm sitting back to the boat right, and they're raising the fire hoses up the sides. I'm just trying not to get hit by them as they go up.
Your connection is actually quite bad. Very difficult to understand what you're saying. So if there's any position you could get in where you have a better view of the satellites,
I'm not quite sure why it's so bad, because I have a good view of the sky. So
what little we heard sounded interesting. You said they were raising something, and you were trying not to get hit.
Yeah, I'm trying not to get hit by fire hoses that are being raised because they do maintenance around here. In fact, it's about a good view of the sky, so I don't know why the signal would be bad.
Huh.
Well, if the signal is bad, how's the food there?
The food's pretty good. I mean, it's basically you get three full meals a day, but they had weird times. They're at 7:30 in the morning, which is weird for me. They're at 11 in the morning, which is weird. And then at 5:30 in the afternoon, pretty much for the day.
Some people wouldn't consider that weird.
I don't think that's weird at all, except for the breakfast.
Well, you know, there is a gap from 5:30 to 7:30 in the morning. That's a big gap.
Are there no snacks available? No vending machines? No candy bars?
Yeah, there are some snacks you can get, like, you know, peanuts or something like that. But, you know, you can't survive on that.
Well, you'll just have to wake up at 7:30. Have you passed the international dateline yet?
Yes, in fact, I had two Sundays last Sunday. It was kind of interesting because we had little signs up all over the boat saying, make sure to remember that tomorrow is also today. And, so it was good for us. So now, last week I was ahead of you, this week I'm behind you.
Well, we always try and stay ahead of here at WBAI. Sometimes we succeed.
Well, this is
what happened? What happened, Emmanuel, when you crossed the line?
You're asking what happened when I crossed the International Day One? Well, there weren't any fireworks or anything like that, if that's what you're asking.
Were there any sea monsters?
Nothing like that. In fact, you know, I went up the bridge to see if there was any special ceremony. There was basically just one guy running night shift up there. I guess if you do this enough, it's just not that exciting.
So you didn't get to meet Poseidon after all?
I'm sorry?
You didn't get to meet Poseidon after all?
No.
Oh, that's a shame.
That would have been an adventure.
Yeah, it certainly would have been. Has my signal improved?
Not particularly, but we've learned to live with it.
I could walk over to another part of the ship. I don't see how that would make things any better, but if you think it will work, I'll try it.
We think it's just a vagary of chance, so if you're feeling lucky, Go right ahead.
Okay, well, there's ocean on the sides of this boat, so, you know, I'm going to get you in the sky no matter where I am.
What kind of weather are you in? It sounds very windy.
I'm sorry, say that again?
What kind of weather are you in? It sounds really windy.
It's not very windy at all, actually, right? Well, I guess if I walk around the side of the boat, it's too windy. But it kind of alternates. Like, it'll be pouring rain, and then it'll be clear. We seem to be going through a lot of different weather systems. At one point, we had to turn to the south to avoid a storm. So we went a little off course in a few hours, but we did avoid the storm.
We have here in the studio a great big book of antennas, so maybe we can scour it for advice that might improve the signal.
So, Emmanuel,
I'm going to be fire hose now as I walk past it.
Be careful. We've never had anyone get we've had people lose their connections before on the show, but we've never had anyone get like physically knocked out, and I think that's a record we would like to maintain. I meant the not knocked out part. No, we don't want the losing connections.
Yeah, and we'd also appreciate if you didn't go overboard in your effort to get a good signal, either literally or figuratively.
What do you think is going on? This is supposed to be the 21st century, and this is coming off the satellite. He's in the middle of, like, an open water. I mean, what is... Anyone have any idea why the quality is so bad?
Probably heaviside layer scattering. Or something similar.
You just made that up.
No. That's part of the Earth's ionosphere, the heaviside layer.
However, I don't think that layer affects the frequencies, the multi-gigahertz frequencies used by these satellite phones.
Right. It would go right through. It wouldn't really scatter
okay,
at all.
Okay, through heaviside. So it would probably be a higher energy thing.
If it's cloudy or if something else like that, they could be absorbed, but they're probably not scattering too much.
How do these satellites cover? I mean, do they have less coverage out in the Pacific, or is it covered uniformly around the
Allegedly, it's covered uniformly.
Well, originally, Iridium, which is so named because its atomic number is 77, and they planned 77 satellites, was supposed to have, as the name implies, 77 satellites. They ended up with 40-some-odd. So their coverage is gappy in places. They're not as redundant as they want it to be. So this satellite may be further along, further from Emmanuel than they would want it to be.
Right. They're also low Earth orbiting satellites, so there's a chance that there's handoffs being done and that the signal quality will improve. So
did they have 77 satellites and they crashed, or they never got 77?
They never got 77 up, as far as I know.
They went bankrupt, I believe, and then got bought out for cheap. But
you can actually see these satellites with a naked eye, in broad daylight, believe it or not. If you do a search engine request for Iridium flares, that's R-I-R-I-D-I-U-M, and flare or flares, you'll find several websites dedicated to how to spot these. And because they're in a low Earth orbit, they go by rather fast. I guess one went by really fast just now. And what you can see during the daylight hours is the reflection from the solar panels on these satellites. Basically, you can see the sun reflecting off these solar panels just for a few seconds, and they're brilliant, bright flashes in the sky. They're often mistaken for UFOs. Well, by definition, if you don't know what they are, it is an unidentified flying object. But I encourage our listeners to look up Iridium Flare on the internet search engine, and there's a tables you can enter your geographic coordinates. So there's hints there on how you can figure out what your latitude and longitude are. And there's a very narrow time window. You can find out, like, within a 5-minute time period on this day, there'll be an Iridium flare at this part of the sky where you are. And if you look in that general direction, you'll see this brilliant flash that streaks across the sky for a few seconds. And, you've seen an Iridium satellite. It's worth checking out. First time I saw one, I was just awed. It was that impressive.
Can you see these in urban areas, or do you need to go somewhere with less
going on in the sky? I saw one right here in Philadelphia, which is a major city, and I was just standing up on the roof deck and flash. It was right where it was supposed to be, about when it was supposed to be, and lasted a few seconds, and I was just like, wow. But it's not something you're ever going to see by chance, because they're so fleeting that it's unlikely you'll see one by chance. But if you're looking for it and know what narrow time window, based on your coordinates and what part of the sky to look in, unless it's overcast, you'll see it.
Well, we're hoping that Emmanuel, if you see one and you're on an Iridium phone, does your reception get better or worse?
I don't see how.
That's a very good question. I don't think it would make much difference.
Okay. Well, then we're hoping that Emmanuel either sees or doesn't see one as appropriate to improving.
Just in passing, if you're going to be looking at the sky anyway, do some sky watching at night. Mars is closer than it's going to be for the next 60,000 years. So anytime, any night, pretty much, you can pick it up. I've had great success in picking it up without really trying for the past several weeks. And it's fairly impressive, if you like that sort of thing.
Were you able to see the canals, Jim?
No, but I imagined that I did.
I heard a rumor that we have Emmanuel back with us. Is that true?
That's true. Actually, I went back inside. I'm in my room right now, and I'm just leaning up against the window. For some reason, I get better reception during just standing outside under the clear sky. Go figure, satellite technology.
Much better.
We hear you 5x5, practically.
I'm following the rules, and I'm doing everything I'm told to do. I go outside and be under the sky, and that doesn't work. But going inside and standing by a narrow window, that apparently does. So I don't know. I can't figure it out.
You realize there's no real, like, practical explanation for that at all.
But the interesting thing is I'll be actually back in the United States in a couple of days, and that's going to feel pretty weird. We've been playing with the AM radio, and at night, actually, just after we crossed the international dateline, at night we were able to start picking up stations out of San Francisco. Before that, it had been stations out of Tokyo. So it was pretty thrilling to hear literally voices from America coming over the seas. I think that's really a cool way to start getting reacquainted with your country, hearing a distant radio station getting ever stronger night by night.
What sort of radios do they have on the ship?
Well, what they give us in the rooms are kind of inadequate. They give us just medium wave, long wave for some reason. There's nothing on long wave that we can receive. And TV, and of course there's nothing coming over on any of those, and FM as well. But I had to detach the antenna on the back of the stereo system and run it towards the window, and then I was able to actually pick up a signal, but of course only at night.
I would imagine that the AM or medium wave radio has one of those ferrite loop stick antennas inside. So unless it's right near a window or on the top deck, I would imagine your AM or medium wave reception would be pretty limited.
It is pretty limited. What I did was I detached the antenna that was fixed to the back of the radio and ran that to the window. But again, there is some interference from the ship. The whole thing is bolted to the table, so it's very hard to actually move it around. In fact, it's rather impossible.
Have you gotten to the radio room and seen the radio equipment they have on the ship? And do they have you have the ability to listen to their radios?
Well, I've been on the bridge, which is kind of cool. In fact, it's very cool. And they have a shortwave radio. They have two-way communications of various sorts. But, you know, I don't really want to waste their time by listening to the radio while they're supposed to be doing work. They did listen to the results of the German elections, because this is a German crew.
What results? There's no results.
In that. Well, that's pretty much the answer we got as well. I also, this is amazing. I went to the engine room the other day, and boy, you know, it's like being in a nuclear power plant. It really is. You have no idea how big the engine for a boat like this is. It's simply, it's many stories high. It simply goes on for many times the length of the building that we're in. I had no idea it was that that intricate, that complex, and able to be run so efficiently by so few people.
How big is it? It's several stories high by... How many football fields?
Well,
that's a standard unit of measure.
It's just... You're going down ladders, and you're walking across little bridges, and you see down, you know, all kinds of equipment, that's constantly chugging away. You have to wear things over your ears or you will be completely deafened. It's just an amazing little world that exists down there that we kind of forget about up here in the little apartment complex that we have on this thing.
And likely the same kind of technology was in place in the cruise ship that you took, but you never got the chance to see it because it's a whole different kind of environment presentation.
Yeah, and I was thinking of just that, actually. I wondered how big that room must have been, but the funny thing is, I didn't even see where that room began, where you could have accessed it, let alone be able to access it. But, yeah, it just to show everything that you're in, every building, every vehicle, always has something underneath someplace that makes it all work, and that's where the real magic happens.
Sometimes the equipment is right in the middle where the people are, and it's kind of annoying. Any other experiences from the ship?
Plenty, but I'll be posting those to the travel log, which you can access at www.travel. There's been out there for the last few days because I'm in the middle of the ocean and can't upload things. But as soon as I get to California, Friday, I'll be able to do it for a couple of days. So if anybody wants to participate in Speaker's World or anything like that, send us an email. You can send it to oth@2600.com, and I'll probably pick it up that
so
way.
Where will you be in California for those few days?
Hello? Are you with us, Emmanuel? I guess not.
I was just going to tell Emmanuel that his Iridium phone does allow him to upload, allow him to establish IP connectivity with the internet at the fabulous rate of about 2 kilobits per second.
Wow!
Amazing.
So there's a data cable adapter you can get for that particular phone handset he has.
Okay, so at 2 kilobits per minute and whatever the per minute charge is, how much would it cost to upload one photograph?
Well, 2 kilobits per second, actually.
Yeah. Oh, sorry, 2 kilobits per second, mm-hmm. and there's a per minute charge, and if you have a photograph that's 50 kilobytes.
It's about $1 a minute.
Okay, you see it gets very expensive very quickly.
Yeah. What would a one megabyte upload or download cost if it were 2 kilobits per second? It'd be what, $500 for a megabyte?
Would it really be that much? I don't know. Let's delegate this to the people who aren't talking right now and have pen and paper. We'll come back with the answer maybe towards the end of the show.
I wanted to follow up with that URL that Emmanuel gave out for those who couldn't understand it. It's www.2600.com/travel. And I think he sent the email oth@2600.com. So if you have an email, send him. All right.
Shall we give the mailing address while we're at it?
We might as well.
The mailing address here at Off the Hook is Off the Hook, care of WBAI, 120 Wall Street.
10th floor.
And that's in New York, New York.
10005.
All right. Did you get that?
I miss the address?
You did miss the address.
Walter was very good this week.
Thank you.
Rats.
I know you were dying to send us a letter from the boat, but you'll just have to wait till you get on land so you can download the show and listen to it and hear the address.
Yeah, I found it a lot of desire. It's so fun trying to talk to people, and even with a view of the sky, it doesn't very well.
It sounds like you're doing a great job circuit bending some sort of piece of hardware somewhere.
I think he sounds like Peter Frampton in Do You Feel Like We Do?
Well, he took umbrage at that, I see.
All right. Do we know where he's going to be in California in case people want to see?
I believe he's arriving in Long Beach, which is near L.A., right?
Yes, it's same county, different city.
Well, then, and so maybe he'll even go to L.A., I guess.
Why?
we... Maybe our L.A. listeners can tell us all the wonderful things about L.A.
In L.A. County, you can play poker unless you're in the city of L.A., in which case it's illegal.
Well then, now, again, if he downloads the show and listens to it, he'll know of something to do while in Long Beach.
I don't think in Long Beach it's legal either, but I'm not sure.
Jim, make up your mind.
It's by local community, but the city of L.A. bans it.
I see.
Well, at least he's not going to the Gulf of Mexico.
I think we have Emmanuel back with us for at least a moment.
Yeah, I'm really sorry about this. Satellite technology really, maybe it's my phone, I don't know. It was better before, but it's really bad today.
Well, we're learning about all kinds of things you can do in Long Beach, which is where you'll be, right?
Yeah, what, are there things to do in Long Beach?
Maybe.
Well, hopefully one of them is figure out a way to get via mass transit to Los Angeles. That would be very helpful.
Do they have mass transit in Long Beach? I'm not sure.
Yeah, that's something I'm not very aware of.
We got an email from a listener who grew up in Long Beach but is no longer there, so maybe they or someone who is currently in Long Beach knows about this sort of thing and can email us.
Okay, that sounds pretty good. But do we have any actual material for the show? I don't want to focus on just my problems making a phone call.
I had two questions left before we move on to news stories. The first was that you mentioned last week that there might be internet access available on this freighter that you were on, although you weren't sure about how you. Well, never mind.
Let's discuss the news. I'm going to start with an update to a story we talked about last week, which is this clown circus in Christiania in Copenhagen, Denmark. We have another news story from infoshop.org, which has some information about it. And apparently it took 200 riot police to raid the so-called Meadow of Peace, now ironically named. And you can go to this website. You can go to infoshop.org and read the article, which is, of course, in English. But the best, really, website that I found is the Danish Clown Army website, which is klovne.net, which may be Danish for clown, I'm not sure, klovne.net. And there you can see pictures and recruiting information and all kinds of stuff about the Danish Clown Army, so it's kind of fascinating.
Also, a listener emailed us to tell us that on the... We mentioned last week there wasn't that much coming out of Christiania, but apparently if you go to the Christiania website, to the English section, there are sites of various people who live there, as well as an IRC server that they supposedly live on. I didn't have time to log on to the IRC server, but I found that interesting.
Now, the last time I checked, and I shouldn't comment negatively without having recently checked, these sites were all years out of date. So maybe they've been updated since, but this years out of date information is not what we need. Okay, Jim, looks like you have another news story.
I have further bad European news, at least in my opinion, but this is about the Netherlands. The Dutch government plans to open an electronic file on every child at birth starting January 1st, 2007, supposedly as a tool to spot and protect the troubled children of the future, according to the health ministry.
Isn't that sweet?
Yeah. All citizens will be tracked cradle to grave in a single database, including health, education, family, and police records. Supposedly, as a privacy safeguard, no single person or agency will be able to access all contents of a file, but organizations can raise red flags in the dossier to caution other agencies about problems. Now, actually, I think that having no one able to access all of it is a bad idea, because if the person whose file it is can't even access it, it can't be corrected either.
Well, first of all, that's nonsense, because whoever's maintaining the systems is going to be able to access everything.
Not necessarily. There are cryptographic techniques in that you need a certain number of people to access the data.
Yeah, but we're talking about a government.
Okay. Well, I'm just saying that the algorithms exist to do something like that, so it's not impossible.
All right, but implementing them properly and all the other factors that go into it are it's very rarely done correctly.
It's not even so much that I don't think the Dutch government doesn't have the resources to implement it however they want. It's that I'm sure that the ministry, whose name I forget, actually has access to all the data, and they're just pretending like they don't.
They'll just make a good show of it.
Yeah, the Dutch equivalent of MI5 or the FBI. You can actually, I was on their website, or not on their website, but on another website recently, and I read the annual report of this agency, whose name might be AVID, but probably isn't. And you can just see all the things that they've investigated in the last year. And I'm sure the FBI is doing the same thing. They just don't bother to issue annual reports about it. But there's this paragraph, like, on leftists. And it doesn't issue any information about why leftists might be dangerous. It just says, well, they had a rally.
Now, I can just imagine in 20 years a story running in, say, the New York Times that somebody walked out of the Danish government with a hard drive or a laptop containing this database.
This is the Dutch government.
Dutch, sorry. Getting confused. The Dutch government. And imagine, I mean, what do you think would happen as a result of that?
It's always an incredibly bad idea to have that much information all in the same place, especially if you don't have the cryptography to keep it safe, which it seems like none of the companies or governments today do have it available.
Although, I mean, how much outrage have we seen about people's personal information being stolen nowadays? You know, people walking off with thousands of student records, et cetera, et cetera. Nobody seems to really care.
I'm outraged.
Okay. Well, Mike is outraged.
I'm also outraged, yes.
And I think the whole premise of the whole idea of labeling children from the get-go is this is a problem child, look out for him, is just a really stupid idea.
Yeah, I thought for one paragraph this was more bad news than I've ever seen in one paragraph.
What's interesting is that the usual excuse for creating these databases is that we'll somehow protect children in case of being kidnapped or whatever. But they're not even trying that excuse. They're saying right out from the get-go, we can find problem people this way.
Well, they're protecting the problem children from themselves.
Well, that's sweet.
Right. They'll need counseling. They might need assistance. They might need medical, you know. These poor, poor problem people.
I would urge our Dutch listeners, and I know we have a fair number, to, get this government out of there as quickly as possible.
There's some more news.
Is it better?
Well, it's half better.
Okay.
And it's from this country. One of our domestic music artists, who I've never heard of before, called Switchfoot. Their new album, Nothing Is Sound, which is on the Sony. It's on the Sony label.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently, Sony issued this CD with copy protection, which makes it very difficult for, or makes it harder for. Purchasers of the CD to copy the music onto their MP3 players, iPods, or other portable devices, or computers for that matter. And interestingly, in this case, this is nothing new about that sort of thing happening. What's interesting in this case is the band Switchfoot on their website apologized for this copy protection, saying that they didn't really have a lot of control over it. Sony did. So they explained ways of circumventing the band. On their website, detailed ways to circumvent this copy protection and how to rip the songs to their computer or MP3 player. So they link to an open source program called CDX, and they have a download page on it. So I think this is good. I think more and more artists should speak their minds and say, hey, we don't agree with what the label is doing, and better yet, make sure that their contract says something that, like, the record company will not copy protect their music.
I think there's a lot of bands that might like to, but the power in negotiating these contracts is uneven. So a lot of these small bands especially don't feel that they really can negotiate that sort of thing into their contract.
Is this another sort of copy protection where... hang on, I've got to answer the phone. Go ahead.
Okay.
Well, we salute Switchfoot, the anti-Metallica of its day.
Well...
I wonder what the label's response would be to those who asked, you know, what are we supposed to do? Because if you look around today, nobody still carries around a CD player. I mean, some people do, but most people are using MP3 players or other portable music playing devices. I mean, do they expect that every time you're going to listen to the music, it's going to be on the CD directly from the original CD?
I don't think they really care as long as you buy it. And then once you've bought it, they don't care if you listen to it or not.
Oh.
My question about if anyone knew about the specifics of the technology used to copy protect it, is another one of those things where when you put it into a computer, it auto-runs some sort of driver install that prevents access to the CD? Or
that's what it sounded like, reading the band's instructions.
Mm. So is Linux a copy protection circumvention device then?
Maybe. Speaking of copy protection circumventions device, we got an email from Russell, who's in Canada, informing us that their country is proposing a bill called C-60. C may be standing for Canada, I don't know. Where they are going to pass a law similar to the Digital Millennium Copyright Act here in the United States. And there's a website opposing the bill called killbillc60.ca, which I thought was a clever name. So you can go onto that website and learn more. There's also digital-copyright.ca, which is the group behind it.
All right. Emmanuel, are you with us? Or
I'm with you. I'm standing on top of the boat now, and it's really windy up here. And the thing is, I have the biggest view of the sky here, so if the phone doesn't work from here, it must be defective or something, because you can't see more sky than I can see right now.
You didn't prepare that sock that Bernie recommended, did you?
I'm sorry, can you speak up?
You didn't prepare the sock that Bernie recommended, did you?
I this is ridiculous. The irony is, I'm paying $1.50 for this. So
take off your sock.
I like technology at this stage.
Manuel, you should take off your sock and put it over the handset.
I should what?
Take off one of your socks and put it over the handset. It'll make a good windscreen.
Well, you know, it's kind of hard for me to get undressed up here on top of the boat, on top of everything else, you know.
The crew thought you were strange before.
I don't want to distract from the show too much with my various woes here in trying to communicate. But there's one story I thought was really interesting that I saw actually last week. It concerned a police department that was able to trick some guy that they suspected of murder into revealing his DNA. They sent him a letter. They had him seal the envelope. He sent the envelope back to them thinking that he had won some kind of contest. And they were able, through the saliva on his on the envelope that he had left, they were able to identify him as the actual murder suspect and make an arrest. I thought that was a fascinating story, and I'm kind of hard pressed to find a real issue with this. I don't know. What do you guys think?
I thought they only did this in TV shows.
I think it's an excellent opportunity to give homeless people in your neighborhood a job licking your envelopes.
You really don't see a problem with this? That you don't have a reasonable expectation of privacy when you send a letter?
Sorry, say that again?
Well, I mean, I think it really becomes a privacy issue when your DNA can be extracted from, you know, licking an envelope.
I think if anything, though, I mean, either you're guilty or you're innocent in this case, and if you're not the right person, then you have nothing to lose.
Well,
let me ask a question to those who think this is okay. Would it be okay if the police department sent a letter to everyone in the country telling them all that they had won $100 and then collecting these envelopes and building a national database?
Right, and that's the problem. You don't want these to be stored.
On the other hand, if you're sufficiently paranoid, you can use one of those little moisteners, a sponge or that little bottle with the sponge at the end to seal your envelopes.
Or get your dog or cat to lick it.
But why should you have to? If the government has reasonable suspicion that you've committed a crime, then they can get a warrant and swab you or whatever. If they don't have reasonable suspicion, then they're resorting to these silly methods, then they shouldn't be doing this.
Well, apparently this was a DNA match, but you know, it's just you just have to be aware. If you just don't know where your DNA is going to be harvested, there's nothing to preventing maybe, to my knowledge, of credit reporting agencies when they get a letter from you disputing something in your credit file, with them analyzing the DNA on the envelope and filing that away in their records. Is that legal?
It may be currently, because we have no privacy laws in this country, really.
Right. It's not that anybody...
I'm having a bit of trouble hearing the conversation, but my only question was, how is this different than fingerprint somewhere and simply saying, hey, does this fingerprint match our records? Is it any different than that?
The difference is that they sent you a letter lying to you for the express purpose of extracting this information.
Well, right, and fingerprinting, you're taking fingerprints off of a crime scene generally, more so than actively going and...
Exactly. This DNA is already linked to you with a high likelihood. Fingerprints, to be linked to you to a high likelihood, you knew darn well when your fingerprints were taken. In other words, they're getting this more surreptitiously than they had got your fingerprints.
Well, it could be latent prints off a drinking glass or something.
Right, but it's not necessary. It has a lesser link to you.
What is interesting in this case is that the police committed a federal felony of mail fraud and got away with it. So, but if you look in most criminal statutes, the police are allowed to break just about any law in order to enforce the law.
I think the more interesting high-tech crime-solving thing of the week is Westchester County District Attorney Janine Pirro has finally discovered Ping. Illegal immigrant was holding another illegal immigrant as his sex slave in Westchester County, kidnapped her and took her across two state lines to Scranton, Pennsylvania, and Miss Pirro, on her news conference, talked about Ping as almost as if it was someone's name in such an odd manner. Apparently, they had the cell company ping the suspect's phone to discover where it was. I don't think that's quite the right use of the word ping, Bernie, but I think you would probably know more about this.
It's a good general term. It's not an actual ping, but it's the general concept. You can send a message out to the phone saying, hey, respond back to us, and that's apparently what they did.
But you could even do, I mean, that doesn't even necessarily have to take place. All this information is logged anyway. So they can go. They can look back at the records, really, and do some quick triangulation calculations and find out very, very close to exactly where you were at any given time, given, you know, the logging is sufficient.
And the only way to prevent that from happening to you is to keep your cell phone turned off, and or use a cell phone that is not traceable to you, like a prepaid cell phone, if you're really concerned about privacy.
Okay. Any other news, Bernie?
Nothing we can't talk about next week, but we might have some callers.
Let's take some callers then. The number is 212-209-2900. I'll give it 30 seconds.
Okay. What shall we talk about for 30 seconds?
Whatever.
Well, the fact
like.
It's only 20 seconds now. That's one thing we can mention.
Okay.
And after
I actually have something to mention. And this is a big thank you to BSD, which is, I guess, a person, not an operating system, who has provided for WBAI a new relay server to the streaming family. And so a big thank you to BSD and to Junes, who coordinates this, as always. And if you have a ton of spare bandwidth that you would like to contribute to us, again, the email address is oth@2600.com.
This gives us an additional capability of serving 500 listeners?
500 listeners. 500 additional listeners. So that's
right.
Always good.
They don't have to have a ton of bandwidth. They could have, you know, some.
Several pounds of bandwidth would be enough.
Right, that would be sufficient.
All right.
Kilograms.
We could use help.
All right, well, if you have some bandwidth and you're not sure if it's enough, send us an email.
Doesn't matter where you are in the world, as long as you have the bandwidth.
All right.
The beauty of
it matters
internet.
If you're on a freighter and all your bandwidth is 2 kilobits per second.
I don't think we're asking Emmanuel to do any hosting here.
I heard that.
All right, let's take a phone call. And good evening. You're on the air.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out if there's a way to hack my phone to disable the E911 capability.
That's a good question.
I have been very happy with my cell phone. Prior to that, I recently misplaced it, had to buy a new one. The fatal error bay in buying a similar one, going to Verizon and telling me that they are just not going to turn it on until I get it.
Right. Verizon now has a policy where they will not activate any phones on their network that don't have the capability. I actually called them a couple of weeks ago and confirmed that.
There's federal rulings that kind of make them have to do this, right?
Well, I mean, if you have a GSM phone, you could get any GSM phone you want and stick your SIM card into
that's
it.
That's true.
Verizon actually has the capability of controlling which phones are on their network because they use CDMA and...
What's your concern with the E911 thing? Because on a lot of phones, it's usually not activated unless you call 911, theoretically.
Well, if the future only holds that it's going to be activated all the time.
Well, keep in mind that regardless of whether or not E911 is activated, which is basically an assisted GPS protocol, you can still be tracked. You can still be tracked with less accuracy, with quite a bit less accuracy, maybe a couple of blocks rather than a couple of feet, using just the cell phone towers that you're connected to. So you're not gaining a whole, you know, great deal of privacy by disabling that feature. You know, if you're really concerned about being tracked, like Bernie said, you're really going to have to turn off your cell phone.
Or get a prepaid one.
Or have something that's not linked to your name. But either way, you will be able to be tracked if you're using a cell phone. So
I predict that there's going to be some hacks out on the internet.
Whoa.
Yeah, that's better. I predict there'll be some hacks on the internet sometime very soon, explaining how to take apart your cell phone and disabling the GPS, Global Positioning System receiver part of the phone, which won't affect your phone calls at all. It will prevent the data stream identifying your location from going to your wireless carrier. Now, doing that will not prevent the carrier from getting a more general idea of your location based on knowing which cell site your phone is connecting with. But the more precise location information that is being required at increasing levels by our federal government. Could be disabled by simply disabling the GPS antenna or the receiver in the phone. I'll bet you pretty soon you'll start seeing these plans on the internet for doing that.
I would like, in addition, someone to tell me how to do the opposite, which is to get my phone to tell me where I am, which apparently no one ever thinks to include in their phones.
I've been able to get into the debugging menu of my phone, but it doesn't seem to be even when the E911 protocol is turned on, it doesn't seem to be working, and I don't know if they set it up or...
I've seen phones where it works on the service menu. You know, there you can usually find that very easily online.
My 7-year-old Sprint PCS phone has a service mode that will tell me the latitude and longitude of the nearest cell site to me, which is a handy feature. But it's not accessible to the general public, and this is an old phone that you can't get anymore.
Right. Again, you can do some quick Google searches.
You're going to be able to plug your phone number into Google Maps, and it'll come right up where you are.
Maybe.
Hopefully not.
All right. Thank you for your call. All right. Let's move on to another phone call. Good evening. You're on the air.
Good evening, sir. I'm using a prepaid wireless carrier.
Oh, all right. Let's take another phone call. And good evening. Nope. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hey, things. I had a couple of suggestions for Emmanuel when he gets to Long Beach.
Okay.
There's a light rail system that goes from Long Beach to downtown LA.
Light rail from Long Beach to LA?
Light rail system.
This isn't the subway in Los Angeles, is it? Is it something else?
Hey, it's the same system. They connect it different ways.
It's true that our listeners do know everything.
Yeah.
And when he gets into downtown Los Angeles, right next to the Union Station Amtrak, he has to go try the Mexican food at Olivera Street.
Where's
I'll be
that?
Sure to do that.
One other question. Is poker legal in Long Beach?
Is what?
Poker. Are there any poker parlors in Long Beach?
I think nearby, in Orange County.
Well, I know there's poker in Bell Gardens and in Commerce. Just
think,
okay.
All right.
One last question. One last comment.
Mm-hmm.
I want to thank Redbird because I'm much more informed about the fact that my ATM card just got cloned.
Oh. How did you find out about that?
Looking at my online bank statement, I had 4 charges in Istanbul this Monday.
Oh,
ooh.
That's not fun. Yeah, there's devices that people stick onto the, you know, the outside of ATMs and whatnot, and it's essentially just a very, very small read head and a flash chip, you know, the microcontroller, and it just stores, you know, however many hundreds of cards it can store, and then it's very easily removed, and they are very actually some of them are very hard to tell, you know, when you're looking at it, that this is not actually part of the ATM. So you really got to be careful about that if you're using an ATM on the street that's not part of your bank or something, that someone didn't stick one of these things on there. So.
Can they actually trace the PIN input, or is it just cameras?
Sometimes there's cameras. Sometimes you don't need a PIN if you can use your debit card as a credit card.
I had my debit card stolen once, and you know, they were able to just use it to buy Metro cards. It just worked like a credit card. So.
Right, you really got to be careful about that, and that's another reason magnetic stripe technology really should be on its way out, but it's unfortunately becoming more popular.
All right, let's try another phone call. The number, again, 212-209-2900. All right, and good evening, you're on the air.
Hi, two questions. Any website to compare prepaid cell phone plans?
Anyone have any input on that?
They're all kind of expensive.
Yeah, none of them are really cheap, but one company that several acquaintances of mine have had success with is Track Phones. It's TRAC phone.
Okay,
that's one worth checking out that I know people have used successfully.
Thank you. And the next question, surfing the internet on a laptop, do you need to have a cell phone also?
Are you talking about wireless internet access?
Right.
If you go to a computer store, generally, there will be wireless internet, Wi-Fi cards, they call them, and then there'll be hotspots in different places. I'll let Joe explain it, because I have to get the phone.
All right, well, this is probably a better question for the personal computer show, which comes after us, but in short, you can, depending on the sort of access you want, if you really want access anywhere, you can do it through a cell phone, but more commonly, people use wireless hotspots, which are available at local coffee shops and stuff like that, or you can even set one up at home if you have a cable.
Then outside of the city, like in the country, where you need a cell phone, like, does that...
There do exist services offered by the various mobile phone companies that give you internet access, anywhere that they have phone service, and... they're a bit pricey, but I do know some folks who've used them quite successfully.
Verizon just announced a service for $60 a month flat rate for their new EVDO service, which gives you high-speed connectivity from your laptop anywhere Verizon's network is in operation. So, but it's, again, it's $60 a month.
Thank you, fellas.
All right. Let's take another phone call. And good evening, you're on the air. No, you're not. Good evening, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi, guys. The Iridium satellite, isn't it just a matter of trust that they, quote, didn't all work? I mean, it turns out the taxpayer paid for the space shuttle. I mean, isn't it just possible that they did it on the cheap, the military? They let somebody in a dummy company put them up? And then say the company doesn't have. I'm just curious, how do you know when a system like that fails? Versus just that we footed the bill, and then, the military has the thing.
I'm not sure. I mean, it clearly, at least sort of works, as you can tell by the background noise.
Okay, listen, I really like your show, but I'm just saying, it just, the space, I was rah-rah for the space program, but, it's over 90% military, and they put up all the military spyware using my tax dollar that was supporting John Glenn.
Well,
thanks a lot.
I just want to say, I think Iridium was a private company, right, or was it? It was.
Right. Yes, I mean, they piggyback on the space shuttle launch.
Right, but
the Defense Department has its foot in everything, including Iridium.
There was a private company, Motorola, and another company. A lot of shareholders put in billions of dollars, and a lot of private shareholders lost billions of dollars collectively on that project. And then and then the military did not buy the system, but another company bought it, and the military is now the primary user of the system. So the biggest customer for Iridium is the United States military.
Well, it's not a very good technology, it would seem. But
I've heard the word Iridium said here, and I just got to say, it's not a word I'm very fond of right now, because it's a service that's something horrible, at least in this part of the Pacific Ocean. So other parts of the world wasn't so bad, but here I can barely hear anything anybody's saying, and I keep losing signal constantly, even though I have a clear blue sky all around me.
Well, it would probably be a better technology if you were, say, a large battle cruiser with a big, you know, huge dish on your roof, as opposed to a little handset. So.
Do you imagine coordinating military targets with this kind of a phone and? And like people not hearing it correctly, and then they drop the bomb on the wrong town.
Well, no, you would
well,
say.
Actually, Bernie, you know, actually, I could explain a lot. Maybe our military is being coordinated that way.
Yeah.
But seriously, Bernie, wouldn't you send multiple data streams and confirm it several times? Or, you know, one packet would get through if you send 500.
I think you have a lot of faith in the competence of. U.S. military, Jim.
I didn't say they would actually do that. I said that's how we would do it.
All right. Do we have time for another call?
I think we have time for at least one more.
All right.
All right. Good evening. You're on the air. Oh. Good evening. You're on the air.
Using a prepaid calling card.
One more try. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hi, hi there. I called you a couple of months ago about my Verizon landline. I had a business phone that was out for almost a week. Mm-hmm. And I called about my rights, if I can get any money from Verizon, and I was told that I can only get about $1.60, which is probably what they charge me per day.
Yeah, but that's probably right.
I'm glad that you called back. Can you please email us, oth@2600.com, because I really wanted to give you a good explanation, but we weren't able to on the air.
Well, I just wanted to let you know that I got about $960 from this.
Whoa.
Hey, all right.
$960.
On August 18th, they told me the check is in the mail, and I still didn't get it.
Huh. Well, don't hold your breath, but that's an accomplishment.
All right, well.
I'd like to say a word about Verizon, if I may.
All right, quickly.
Well, I mentioned a few weeks ago that they engage in all kinds of deceptive business practices as far as installing the internet lines for competing companies. We had yet another appointment with them this week, and once again, we had somebody waiting all day long. They never showed up. It's incredible. It's now, I think, four separate occasions where we're hearing this.
Well, what can you do about Verizon? Anyway, that's
I'll do something when I get back.
Okay. Well, that's all the time we have for tonight, and we'll see you all next week.
What should we do with the drunken sailor? What should we do with the drunken sailor?